This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, Europe unveils quota plans for migrants. The United States promises to accept more of them. A Washington protest denounces the Iran nuclear deal. Sensing technology leads to new apps.
It looks at things both in the visual spectrum as well as in the infrared spectrum. It's bouncing infrared off, which is what gives things the volume.
A country music band takes a break with Broadway on the mind. These stories are more just ahead. I'm Ray Kugel. European Commission Chief Jean-Claude Juncker is calling on European Union member states to resettle 160,000 refugees in a two-year plan. He says Greece, Italy, and Hungary can no longer handle the burden alone. Speaking to the European Parliament Wednesday, the European Commission President urged Europe to face the current refugee crisis with solidarity.
Now is not the time to take fright. It is the time for bold, determined, concerted action by the European Union, by its member states, and by its institutions.
Juncker said the granting of emergency relocation in 22 member states must be done in a compulsory way to avoid delay. International Edition's Jeffrey Young spoke with the head of one Serbian NGO working to assist refugees with basic needs.
Rado Jurovic is the executive director of the Serbian NGO Asylum Protection Center. He portrays the situation in his country as huge, with a government that is not financially or otherwise able to fully respond to the refugee waves moving on through Serbia to Hungary.
Our Asylum Protection Center is providing basic information to the refugees, providing legal aid and legal representation before the police and other institutions and courts, as well providing psychosocial support to the refugees, as well focusing on the children and the women and all those that are exhausted and in need. Moreover, our organization is providing humanitarian aid in the field across the whole Serbia, directing and focusing humanitarian aid, and they need some kind of protection. Our efforts are quite in the media as well, trying to raise awareness on this issue as well as to prepare the white public on what will come, because Serbia is quite unexperienced in the continental migration. For our society, it's really important to have the proper picture and the face of the problem and face of these refugees in need. So we are also present near the Subotica region, which is the northern region on the Hungarian border, trying to provide information, trying to help people and assist, organize mobile teams in order to be in the field all the time.
As these refugees move across Serbia, they need food, they need water, they need basic sanitation. Some of them are sick. How can you help them?
We are getting humanitarian aid from the individuals and from the private corporations and trying to deliver them in the places where they are, providing them all basic hygiene, diapers, all what is needed for the babies, powders, and all other things that is needed. As well, we are trying to provide them clothes, warm clothes, especially because the weather circumstances are changing in Serbia nowadays. We are trying to assist people to go to the existing asylum camps in order to provide them proper accommodation there. But the problems are enormous.
Rados Jurovic, executive director of the Asylum Protection Center in Belgrade, Serbia, speaking with International Edition's Jeffrey Young. The United Nations expects as many as 850,000 asylum seekers will head to Europe this year and next. The United States says it is considering additional steps, including taking in more refugees. A coalition of U.S. religious groups led by the Church World Service, a global humanitarian service, is calling on Washington to allow in 200,000 refugees, including 100,000 Syrians, over the next year. International Edition's Victor Beatty spoke with the group's Associate Director for External Relations, Will Haney, about the 37-member coalition's appeal.
The reason for this is just the overwhelming amount of Syrian refugees and refugees in the world today. I mean, we have more refugees in the world now than at any point since World War II. We've been used to the United States saying that they're a leader in refugee resettlement. Well, unfortunately, that's just not the case anymore with the Syrian crisis. So, I mean, that's really why we're having this call, to really put the United States back into its place of leading in terms of refugee resettlement and support to refugee groups.
Well, the Obama administration apparently indicates that it is considering the urgency of the migrant crisis in Europe as it considers further steps. Is this leaving the door open to admitting more than just the 1,400 or 1,500 so far from the Syrian conflict into the U.S.?
We've heard and we've seen a few nods from different officials and different indications that there is a willingness to do more, but that it hasn't actually come down to anything really in the end. We're still waiting on actual concrete evidence and concrete decisions being made for more Syrians coming to the United States and just for more refugees being resettled overall. There's been a large push to reach the ceiling that we've had for this fiscal year, and so we are very grateful that every agency and every group that's associated with us is really making the push to use all the available slots that we have for refugees coming to the United States this year. But that effort has to be continued. The crisis isn't going away in Syria, and it's not going away in Europe. And for the United States to not recognize that crisis and not see that Germany taking in 800,000 refugees, I mean, we can certainly take in a few more.
Given the political climate in the U.S. and the debate over immigration, whether legal or illegal, is this coming at a bad time?
Actually, over this last weekend, we've been receiving calls. I think it's the largest outpouring of support that I've ever seen for refugees here in the United States. We've been getting calls from people from coast to coast saying that they want to help Syrians, that they want to take Syrians in, that they want to be able to provide for refugees. And we're just not talking about cities. We're not talking about population centers. These are people really in rural areas, in the suburbs, in the cities, all across the United States, willing to take in refugees. So when we talk about maybe a backlash against refugees and the contentious debate about immigration in Washington, I don't think that's actually really reflected that much in individual people across the country. I think we've seen desire from individuals to take more refugees, and so that's why we're pushing for it.
Would these be people who would permanently settle in the United States, or is your vision that they would be temporary residents?
So the way that the United States Refugee Admissions Program works at the moment is that we give refugees a path to being legal residents in the United States from the moment they arrive. We encourage them to get jobs and to integrate into U.S. society, and within 5 years, they're eligible for citizenship in the United States. So this is definitely not a temporary solution for them. This is a durable solution for refugees to become part of the fabric of local communities in the United States.
The United States so far this year has resettled 70,000 refugees from all over the world, including 1,300 from Syria. The human rights of migrants and refugees will top the agenda of the upcoming session of the U.N. Human Rights Council. The Council's 30th regular session opens Monday and is scheduled to run until October 2nd. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Zayed Raad al-Hussein, will kick off the three-week session with an oral update of emerging crises and situations around the world. German Ambassador and President of the Council, Joachim Rucker, says the migrant and refugee situation in Europe and elsewhere will be a major focus of the speech.
The topic of migration and refugees poses a significant challenge for us all, not just the countries of origin, but the countries of transition and the countries of destination. This is a situation we must address by looking also at the root causes of these movements. And human rights are essential in all aspects of this crisis.
Ruka says lack of respect for human rights is very often the root cause behind migration. He says lack of respect for people's civil and political rights or social and economic rights frequently spurs people to flee their countries of origin. The 47-member council will be faced with a very heavy agenda of global rights violations. Human rights experts will present reports on issues such as arbitrary detention, enforced disappearances, and torture. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Europe migrant story is getting big play on social media. Charlie Hansler is here with what's being said in the Twitter world.
Well, Ray, there's a number of different hashtags related to this topic, but one of the largest hashtags or the most popular that's being used is hashtag migrant march. It has generated over 11,000 mentions on Twitter within the past 5 days, according to Topsy.com, a social media analytics site. Searching hashtag Migrant March on Twitter will bring up a variety of photos and articles on the migrant crisis. One such example is from at RFERL, that is Radio Free Europe Radio Liberties Twitter account. They tweeted out, "What's the asylum process like in Germany? Check out our explainer with a link on this subject." And the tweet ended with the hashtags hashtag migrant crisis, hashtag migrant march. This tweet focused primarily on the migrant situation in Germany.
Charlie, are there any other interesting hashtags regarding the migrant issue in Europe?
Yes. Interestingly, two other very popular hashtags on Twitter dealing with the migrant issue are hashtag refugees welcome and hashtag refugee crisis. Many people are using the terms migrant and refugee when talking about the same topic. This is because there's been a greater call to consider the migrant crisis a refugee crisis instead, because many of the persons streaming into Europe have been fleeing severe violence from their home countries. This would obviously make the persons fleeing to Europe more similar to refugees than they would be to migrant workers. Ray?
Thank you, Charlie. That's Charlie Hansler, and you can follow social media trends for International Edition, which he does, and you can follow him on Twitter at Charlie Hansler. This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei says Tehran will not negotiate with the United States on any other issues following the recent deal on Iran's nuclear program with Washington and five other world powers. Edward Uranian has details at our Middle East Bureau in Cairo.
The crowd applauded Ayatollah Khamenei's views on world and local affairs after listening to his positions toward the United States and other countries he referred to as enemies of Iran.
America is a big man. This is a big man. It's a very powerful man.
The Ayatollah Wednesday called the U.S. the Great Satan, as he has done since he came to power 26 years ago, insisting Islam warns against cooperating with the devil. Khamenei said Iran will not talk with the U.S. about global, regional, or bilateral issues following the June nuclear accord, except when it is imperative. The Ayatollah said Americans don't hide their hostility towards Iran and that members of Congress are plotting and passing bills against Tehran. He said negotiations were a way for the U.S. to impose its will on Iran. Diplomatic ties between the U.S. and Iran, however, remain cut as they have been since 1979. Former Iranian President Abu Hassan Bani Sadr argues that Iran's leadership would ruse its raison d'être if it suddenly started dealing normally with the U.S. after dubbing its enemies, both internally and externally, agents of the U.S.
Le régime a une politique de double visage, en apparence hostile.
Bani Sadr says Iran's leaders play a double-faced game, claiming to be hostile to the U.S., while secretly cutting deals with it, which include U.S. acceptance of Iran's theocratic regime and a larger regional role if it abides by U.S. policies. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
As members of the U.S. Congress prepare to vote on disapproving the Iran nuclear deal, some vocal opposition was being made and heard outside the Capitol building in Washington Wednesday. Republican presidential hopefuls, billionaire Donald Trump, and Texas Senator Ted Cruz were among those who attended the Stop the Iran Nuclear Deal rally. VOA's Catherine Gibson was there and spoke with International Edition's Jim Stevenson.
It was an interesting mix from all around the country. I spoke to Tea Party supporters. Tea Party is a group that's sprung up in the United States in the past few years in response to President Obama's policies and kind of harkens back to a different time in American history. So you see a lot of people dressed up in historical garb in things. I interviewed a man dressed as George Washington, and who identified himself as George Washington, our nation's first president.
Interesting.
And then you see a whole lot of people who are, you know, wearing different clothing items in support of Israel and different political candidates. So it's an interesting mix from all around the country.
Wow, this is quite a visual rally up on the Hill. Most of the rallies that we see here in Washington aren't quite as animated as this. How big was the crowd?
I would say that it was smaller than expected, particularly for something involving Donald Trump. You know, I would estimating a couple thousand on the west lawn of the Capitol. Mm-hmm. Didn't fill it up completely.
Mm-hmm. Now, Donald Trump, of course, the current front runner in many polls among the Republican candidates for the White House in 2016. And he had tweeted a couple days ago that he was really upset about this deal and he was opposed to it and he was going to show up in front of the Capitol.
And he did. He mainly emphasized that we want to be winners and not losers in this deal. And a lot of the supporters that I spoke to in the crowd really seemed to touch them and bring them in to this rally. They like that idea that America needs to be a winner again and that we haven't been, or the perception is that we weren't a winner in this Iran deal.
Were there some specifics offered as to how we might be a winner?
Well, you know, I think mainly what they wanted to see was Congress. A lot of people said Congress should grow a backbone. You know, Congress should stand up for what they believe in. John Boehner should stand up for opposing this deal. And they're very concerned that it's just going to pass through without any opposition.
It sounds like, at least on the House of Representatives side, that in fact, because it is Republican controlled, it will go to a vote of not acceptance, if you will, of this measure. The Senate is the key. We had 41 senators who said that they would, endorse the deal, which would be enough a veto-proof amount, if you will, to let this thing pass.
Right.
These people rallying on the Hill, did they have any real expectations that they might be changing some minds among members of Congress?
You know, I asked a lot of them, we're here at this rally led by Donald Trump, led by Ted Cruz, what can they do to change things? And almost every person actually said, I don't think that nothing is going to stop this from going through Congress. What we are here to do is to have our say and to say that we don't accept this deal. That seemed to be the common theme among the people rallied there.
VOA's Catherine Gibson speaking with International Edition's Jim Stevenson. The global economy continues to deal with the fall of Chinese stocks and other pressures. Joining us from our New York bureau is Alexis Christophers.
Global equity markets rallied, led by an 8% surge in Japanese stocks. The prospect of more economic stimulus coming out of Asia helped to soothe investors who have been rattled by the recent market turmoil. Oil prices gave up early gains because of ongoing concerns about supply. But the biggest equity move was in Japan, where signals from that prime minister that Japan will cut corporate taxes pushed the Nikkei up 7.7%, its biggest one-day rise since 2008. China's finance ministry also said it would strengthen fiscal policy, boost infrastructure spending, and speed up tax reform, and that helped lift Chinese shares for a second day. But an early rally on Wall Street faded, and we see that investors seem to be hanging on the sidelines ahead of the Federal Reserve's two-day meeting next week to see whether or not they do indeed pull the trigger and raise interest rates for the first time in years.
VOA business reporter Alexis Christophers in New York. Coming up, a magic mirror helps pick your clothes. This is VOA.
From science and technology, here's what's new. What's new? A state-of-the-art simulator that uses gaming technology to simulate various driving situations. Australian researchers designed what looks like a large exercise machine with a steering wheel surrounded by huge video walls. The video walls show various traffic frustrations, including tailgaters, roadworks, and rude, abusive motorists. It's designed to test road rage. Here's researcher Paul Turner.
All of us have been oblivious and distracted and occasionally probably even aggressive when we didn't need to be. What this study will be about is giving us some lessons as to what makes us act that way, why do we act the way we do when we're driving, and then what can we do about it.
And our road rage personalities are not good for our health, says fellow researcher Bertie Scott Parker.
And we know that increased levels of stress can have really bad health outcomes like heart disease, problems associated with cancer and diabetes.
For VOA's What's New, I'm Todd Grossons.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. 3D printing and a magic mirror are among the technologies that have come from new computer chips with advanced spatial sensing. Technology startups partnering with chip maker Intel showed off their products in San Francisco. VOA's Michael Sullivan was there.
An imaging application is scanning a toy bear to create a character for the popular game Minecraft. A three-dimensional image of the toy takes shape on the computer screen. It is one of many new apps that lets users customize their games with a camera with an Intel chip called RealSense. Mark Day is chief executive of the company Void Alpha, which developed the app MindScan.
It looks at things both in the visual spectrum as well as in the infrared spectrum. It's bouncing infrared off, which is what gives things the volume. I mean, you could scan your face, you can scan, you know, toys, just pretty much any object.
Another app lets musicians play virtual instruments by moving their arms through the air. A man waves and twists his hands to create a tune on a synthesizer as a mechanical stringed instrument adds to the music. Yet another device, called a memory mirror, helps customers decide what clothes to buy as they pose in front of a smart display. The memory mirror is now being used in several San Francisco branches of a department store. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, San Francisco.
Multiple Grammy-winning trio Lady Antebellum is finishing its Wheels Up tour, and the band will be taking some time off. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA Country Hits USA host Nikki Strong about that move, which will allow the band to be with their families and allow them to work on a song for a Broadway show.
Nikki, this is not unpredictable because two of the three band members have children.
Yes.
And one is expecting their first child.
Yes.
But, you know, Lady A is like a huge act in country music.
They are. They are humongous. And Hillary Scott explained this is not a breakup. This is just a break. And that they have been going nonstop since like 2007 with their first release. And they have been, they've released like six albums, so it's almost been like an album a year. So she said even though they're very accomplished, they've had a great run, all three of them are ready to just enter the next season spending time with their families. They want to give themselves the gift of time. And so they're going to take some time off. An hiatus is what they're calling it. Not a breakup. Not necessarily a break.
And see, this is not like you've heard that phrase, I want to spend more time with my family because of like some kind of scandal or something.
They really want to spend more time with their family.
Hillary had a baby last year, was it? Two years ago. So the baby's a couple of years old.
Yeah.
And those are years you don't get back.
Yeah.
Particularly if you're a mom.
Exactly.
You know, and one of the guys in Lady A is expecting his first child with his wife.
Exactly. That's Charles Kelly.
Yeah. And so.
And Dave Hayward also has a little one.
Dave Hayward has a little one. And that's tough. It can be very, very tough. I mean, granted, when you are a platinum-selling country artist, you have a very nice tour bus. But it's not home.
Doesn't compare. No.
It's not, you know, it's not home. It's not your own sheets. You know, it's not getting up and going to the kitchen and getting coffee in the morning or playing in the yard.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, we've got to go from here to here and unpack and do sound check and maybe grab a couple of minutes with the kids and then go do a 3-hour show.
Or like do a home-cooked meal or, you know, say, hey, let's all hang out at the house, not necessarily the tour bus. So let your heart.
But this is, as you said, it's not going to be a complete break. They plan to do some songwriting while they're taking some time
off,
too.
Yes, apparently they're going to be part of the SpongeBob musical, which will hit Broadway next year.
SpongeBob being a cartoon character on Nickelodeon,
yes.
He is literally a sponge in blue pants. Who lives underneath the sea.
Exactly.
In a pineapple.
Yes, and considering that, you know, they all have little ones, it'll be perfect for them. And so they're supposed to be contributing a song to the musical. I don't know if it's going to be an original song. I'm assuming it is, that they're going to create it, or whether it's going to be pulled from their catalog. But I'm assuming they're going to get together. Because the impression is that they want to spend time with their family, but they still have their creative juices going.
All right. Well, if you want to send a tweet to Nikki, you can send it to @VOA_music. And you can also listen for her and Country Hits USA on our website. That's voanews.com.
That's it for this edition of International Edition. You can get more news, information, and videos on our website at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In the United States, it was called the Underground Railroad, the network of people and safe houses used to help black slaves in the 19th century escape bondage in the South. Recently, a documentary filmmaker traveled to Iraq and learned the story of a 21st century network of people who are risking their lives to help free Yazidi women and girls who have been enslaved by Daesh. The filmmaker, Edward Watts, spoke of the bravery of the individuals engaged in the rescue operations, as well as the level of depravity experienced by the young women who have been captured. Women and girls from minority groups like the Yazidis suffer unspeakable depredations at the hands of Daesh: torture, gang rape, slavery, imprisonment, and in some cases, murder. They are bartered and sold naked at markets, offered up as incentives for Daesh recruits and rewards for fighters. And Daesh boasts about such atrocities, ignominiously claiming that because these women are not Muslims, Daesh fighters are religiously justified in their behavior. But it is not only women from religious minorities who are suffering under Daesh's reign of terror. Muslim women and girls are as well. In its most recent Trafficking in Persons report, the State Department notes that Daesh forces local girls and women under its control into marriages with its fighters and kills them if they refuse. In a CNN interview last year with a Syrian female defector from Daesh, the 25-year-old woman said, "The foreign fighters are very brutal with women, even the ones they marry. There were cases where the wife had to be taken to the emergency ward because of the violence, the sexual violence." The defector, identified only as Khadija for her protection, said that she agreed to be interviewed because she wants to warn people, especially women, who, like herself, are lured to join Daesh through its online propaganda. "I don't want anyone else to be duped by them. Too many girls think they are the right Islam," she said. Daesh, as Zainab Bangura, United Nations Special Representative on Sexual Violence and Conflict, has said, has institutionalized sexual violence and the brutalization of women as a central aspect of their ideology and operations. Such brutalization is a blow to human dignity and to the very foundation of civilized society. It destroys entire communities and makes stabilization efforts all the more difficult. And it is a key reason why the United States and its partners remain determined to defeat Daesh.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's 4.